Good morning. If you would please open your Bibles to 1 John. 1 John is where we'll begin here in just a moment. And Tony and Carol, I can't help but notice y'all brought quite a crowd today. But I do want you to know that I noticed, tell Coach and Kim, I noticed who's missing and who didn't know how to get here on time. Now, there may be some story, I don't know, I just probably stuck my foot in my mouth that they got something out of their control while they couldn't be here. I want to talk to you this morning about something that's been a part of my life for a good while. It's been something that Lauren and I have treasured for a long time. This is actually, we're celebrating our 18th year of marriage. You know, earlier this month, my birth year didn't seem to bother me much about how old it had gotten. You know, sometimes people don't like getting older. But something about 18, I did the math three times this morning to make sure I could get ahead this right. I didn't want to say it in front of her and she'd say, no, it's only 17, or no, you're off, it's 19, you know, so I kept doing the math, and sure enough, she said, yeah, 18, so for 18 years, something that has been important to us is the incredible power of love languages. Now, it's been interesting to see who is familiar with this idea and who is not. I won't mention which marriage it was I was hanging out with recently, but I was with somebody, and I mentioned the five love languages, and they didn't know it, and I thought to myself, that's why your marriage is such a mess. Now, I didn't actually think that. I'm just lighting the mood a bit. Well, another way we could lighten the mood, I'll tell you the secret. If you don't know what love languages are, here's really why Lauren and I are still in love after 18 years. It's tacos. Tacos as expressed through the love languages. Some of y'all maybe have seen this before. The five love languages, if you're not aware, is about words of affirmation, acts of service, receiving gifts, and quality time, and physical touch. This was an idea that was pioneered by a guy who called himself a Christian counselor. I don't know any more about his particular brand of Christianity, so if you know more about that than I do and you want to talk about that, that's fine. But he advertised himself as a Christian counselor in which he derived these ideas from the scriptures, and it was some advice that he gave to a young married couple who were falling on some hard times. He started asking them questions about, well, what did you all do whenever you were dating that you're not doing now? And as he began to work with different couples in his therapy and counseling, he found out that there were different ways that people express love. And I found out then also that all of the young people that I took up to Longmont and some of the ones came up on their own, y'all had to talk about this yesterday. So I'm sorry this is going to be a repeat for some of you all. And for the rest of you who've known these love languages for a while, it never hurts us to be reminded of them, because here's what I like to try to do with these. I like to ask myself, how am I using these in a variety of relationships? You see, this joke here about Lauren and I and 18 years of marriage, the thing that I've learned about it too is that it applies in so many other areas. And the scriptures tell us to love different types of people. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. One of the things that you'll see with these love languages is that oftentimes they require a certain amount of sacrifice. Getting a little into the details of the love languages before we get there, if you do a test on them, you can test as the one being your primary love language, and then you have some that are your last love language. And what Lauren and I found out when we first discovered this book and we took the test is my number one is her five, and her number five is my one. So the sacrifice was that she had to do a little bit of learning about my one, and I had to do a little bit of learning about her one, and I can tell you it took a lot of sacrifice on our part to do those primary love languages. So husbands might have to make sacrifices as the wives will as well. And the wives, here's what's interesting about Titus chapter 2. It says there that the older women were to train the younger women to have this love. You see here in our Western culture of falling in love, it's very, very much like our brother Jackson back there. It's good to have you back with your wife now along with you. So you have this idea of falling in love here in the West and this romance. And we don't talk sometimes about how do you stay in it. And there is this idea in the East, where back in the ancient world, where with some of the arranged marriages, there may have needed to be some training about what that looks like. It didn't always come naturally. Sometimes husbands are not always that lovable. And sorry, kids, but sometimes you kids are not always that lovable. And so the older women were to train the women of what this looked like. And they maybe didn't flesh it out as five love languages, but they might have said something to them about, well, have you done something nice for your children lately or your husband? Have you said something to your husband or have you said something to your children lately about how much you appreciate that they do whatever it is that, you know, they would do in the ancient world? And so without knowing the five love languages, the older woman probably gave advice that reflected some of these ideas. And then you see in 1 John chapter 4, beginning here in verse 7, notice here it says, "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God, and whoever loves has been born of God and knows God. Anyone who does not love does not know God, because God is love. In this, the love of God was made manifest among us, that God sent his only Son into the world so that we might live through him. In this is love, not that we have loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. And beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another." And so something that maybe perhaps you haven't heard these love languages applied to, if you only heard them applied to marriage, well, yes, you can also apply them to kids, but you can also apply them in a church context. Sometimes I think the reason some people don't feel loved in their local church community is because they're not getting their love language from that church community. Now, one of the things I need to say about this group right off the bat is I have been impressed and amazed at the large quantity of people here who are practicing their love language in various ways. Just this very week, I saw some people do the acts of service to another person, to another brother in Christ. That was absolutely amazing acts of service. It's not the first time this group has had that kind of stuff happen. I know it's not going to be the last time this group has had this happen. And so again, my reason for teaching on this is because for most of us, it's a reminder. It's an encouragement to keep on. It's also an encouragement to think about where else maybe have we had a blind spot to where this might help build a new connection with somebody in the church who maybe is beginning to feel like they're drifting from their church connection. And so these apply to all different kinds of areas. And the way that you can determine what your is, if maybe you're new to this, I've never heard of this, what do we do? It's as simple as this. What the counselor did with that young couple is he had them, he got out a 3x5 index card, and he had them each write down 3 or 4 things that they really wanted from their spouse, and then 3 or 4 things that they would do to show their spouse that they love them. And from that list of anywhere would that be, 6 to 8 items, you can generally see themes among those items of what it is you're craving and how you give it. I'll remember his illustration. I'll never forget this because it's such a bizarre thing to me. But he was in Appalachia where he was doing his first little bit of Christian counseling when this whole idea was conceived. And the thing that the wife put down, where she said, "Here's how I could feel love from you." This is written, of course, to her husband. She says, "When you come home from work, I just want you to wipe the baby's face off." What? How dirty? What in the world is going on with that baby's face is what I thought. Good. Somebody else in the audience shook their head like, yeah, that doesn't sound normal at all. Well, everybody has different types of babies. Maybe y'all have some babies where you're like, well, that would have been mine because my babies had always had stuff on their face. But it was she was looking for an act of service from her husband when he came home. And that's the idea, is that everybody's looking for something different. And when they identified what it was for that couple, then he was able to say, oh, I know how I can tell her I love her. I'm going to go wipe the baby's face off. Now, if he was really smart, what he would have done is even when the baby's face wasn't clean, he'd just go rub some dirt on it and then be like, look, hon, you know, I'm wiping it off, right? But I don't think that would have got the idea. But here's how that's how you do it. It's that simple. 3 or 4 things. Another thing that you can do, the guy does sell books, like a lot of authors. You can take a test, 60 questions long, that'll tell you what your love language is. I would say this about it as well. Lauren and I have noticed that your language can evolve over time. First of all, you can speak more than one. You can be bilingual. Some people, when they take the test that he offers, they score the same score for words of affirmation and physical touch, or whatever the case may be. So a couple of things about that. If you score a 0 on 1, don't give up hope. Lauren has learned to speak mine. I have learned to speak hers. So you can go from zero to hero on this test, okay? But you can, and also it can change over time. What used to be her 1, not so much, is not much of her 1 as much as it used to be. And I won't be surprised if in our season of lives, as we go through them, if the Lord allows us many more, that it might evolve again for either one of us. And so constantly kind of reassess and reevaluate. You might list the ways you feel love is missing. That might help you find it as well, and those will indicate your love language. So, yeah, he sold lots of books. And one last thing before we get into them, if you're in the business world, I got to tell you, as soon as I'm done with grad school, the very first management book I plan on buying and reading is this one in the middle. Now, it's not love languages for the workplace. That could get really awkward, especially the physical touch one, right? Where cultures, they are like culture. You've been way too much in a preacher bubble for too long. Cannot be loving at the workplace. So he changed the title, Affirmation. How to affirm your coworkers, your employees, and your employer. And so they can apply there. If you're wondering about the physical touch, I did look into that just a little bit to figure out how they handle the workplace. Fist bumps, handshakes, high fives are things that happen that may mean a whole lot more to some people than they do to you. And so again, if you're interested in that part of how to take this concept to the business place, the five languages of appreciation and affirmation at the workplace. So let's dig into them. Now, let's see here what these are. All right, the first one here, the words. I will tell you that this is admittedly what I tested on. And what I think I still have is my primary, and what I'm so thankful that some of you all here have done. Now, here's the danger with this one. I'm going to be open about this as well. Since mine are words of affirmation, the danger is inflated egos. And so now I'm in this weird spot where this is the first church where I feel like a large quantity of you all get this, and you're like, oh, Coulter likes words of affirmation. I'm going to give them to him. And so I'm constantly, since I've gotten here, I've not had this at any other church, but since I've gotten to this church, I've been constantly worried. I'm like, dear Lord, thank you, it is good, but please help me stay humble because y'all are affirming me in ways that, I really am thankful for that, but worried at the same time. But you see this throughout the scriptures in Ephesians chapter 4, beginning in verse 29. Ephesians 4, verse 29. It says there, let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as good is for building up, as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. And so there's different ways that you can execute this one, with obviously with communication, telling people you appreciate them, complimenting them on things that they may be good at. Proverbs is full of this as well. And really, I started to think about it more this morning. I could have probably found a Proverbs verse for every one of these love languages. But Proverbs chapter 12, verse 25 says, anxiety in a man's heart weighs him down, but a good word makes him glad. Or Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21, death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruits. And so on and on, you see this idea of the words of affirmation, where we are can be sons of encouragement, we can be Barnabases for one another, and encourage them. You can do this in person, but you can also do this in text, either again, text messaging, writing a note. Some of you are excellent card writers, and that shows your love language, and that is a very powerful way to encourage one another. One of the things to be aware of with words of affirmation is that if someone has not been acknowledged, lacking acknowledging them, whenever they don't feel acknowledged, that is something that is a way to actually do negative on the love language for those kind of people. We'll do touch then next. The one of touch. I find out real quickly in churches, as I've been with, I think it's 6-1, who has this as their love language. And here, this group probably thought of somebody right away because it's the first church I've been at where she desires two hugs, and she may be listening on Zoom right now, and that's fine. Two hugs from every service that she's here and I'm here at the same time, and I love that because here's what I know. I know that's her love language. I know that if I were to skip that, that is basically saying to her, I don't love you. And that's an important thing about these love languages is one of the things we're going to have to understand about this is even if it's not ours, when we reject that effort from somebody, let's say you take the test and for physical touch, you're a 0. I heard one of the young people tested that way yesterday. And so I'm praying for them. Because if you test for a 0, here's the temptation, right? You probably don't want to hug this person. But what you have to understand is when that person wants that hug or that fist bump or whatever it is, maybe when you say, no, the equivalent to them is it feels like you've just said, I hate you. I know that's not what you've said, and that's not even what you thought, but the rejection of this love language, that's how that person is likely to feel when we go through that behavior. Again, Bible principle about this, and these need to be appropriate touches. In our culture, sadly, we do have to say to this, you might need to talk about it before you do it. You know, is it okay if I give you a hug? Is it okay if I... are you okay with this, that, or there? My family has communicated that they do not like my high fives. Apparently, my high fives are too strong. So for years, Lauren has, anytime I hold my hand up like this, she goes, you know. So there's communication there about where this is the style of what our physical touch is going to be. Anthony's already giving this look like, what are you doing, trying to abuse your wife? No, I just like a really good, firm, hard high five. But Jesus showed us this with the leper. We know that story well. He was willing to touch a leper. And that meant so much in their culture because they were not allowed to be touching. And so the touch of Jesus to the leper really made an impact on them. They had been touched. They'd been shown love. They had that physical connection that they didn't usually have. And it's not just that, but also the children. When he said, let the little children come to me, if you read the passage there again, I think it's in Mark chapter 10, he picks them up and puts them in his lap. He doesn't hold children at an arm's length. Okay, now guys, let's be honest. There's some of us here that are like that, right? With kids, it's like, good to see you. Yeah, right? If we want those children to feel connected to us, if we want to be able to have a relationship with them, build a connection, being willing to get a little bit closer with them and have that physical touch can be very powerful to certain kids. Again, kids have love languages, and so you may be able to get away with it with some that don't want that, but there's going to be some that want it. Now, let me say this about teenage girls, and I guess it could be true for boys as well. I just don't have one yet. But with teenage girls, if you have a teenage daughter or granddaughter, in the case of some of y'all here, and her primary love language is physical touch, and she's not getting that from her dad with hugs or cuddling on the couch and watching TV, where do you think they're going to look for it? Now, that doesn't answer, I'm not trying to answer all the world's problems with this. Don't think that I have some kind of overly naive, simplistic view, and I know I don't have a doctorate's degree in psychology and all that, but I think that there might be a connection there for some of the cases where that is developed. In some of the cases where you meet these girls who they just always have to have a boyfriend, and it's not just have the boyfriend, but they got to be touching that boyfriend at all times. It might be that they had a mom and dad who did not show them that love language. And so they're craving it, and they're finding it from somebody else who's more than glad to touch them. A little too glad, perhaps, to touch them. And another love language then is gifts. And we see this one throughout the Bible. You see it in marriages, even in the Old Testament. Sometimes that gets a little bit awkward, the way that they're handling that in the Old Testament, of course. But there's long been a history of gift-giving connected at marriages and this showing of love. There was gifts that were brought to Jesus as well. The passage I want to use for this one is Philippians chapter 4. When Paul writes this, basically a thank you letter for the financial support that Philippi had given him here, it's really incredible the language he uses about this this moment. Look at Philippians chapter 4, beginning in verse 14. Yet it was kind of you to share my trouble. And you Philippians yourselves know that in the beginning of the gospel, when I left Macedonia, no church entered into partnership with me in giving and receiving except you only. Even in Thessalonica, you sent me help for my needs once and again. Not that I seek the gift, but I seek the fruit that increases to your credit. I have received full payment and more. I am well supplied, having received from Epaphroditus the gifts you sent, a fragrant offering, a sacrifice acceptable and pleasing to God. And my God will supply every need of yours according to the riches and glory in Christ Jesus. To our God and Father be glory forever and ever. Amen. I just love that language of what financial giving was for Paul. Paul saw this as a form of worship comparable to sacrifice to the Old Testament. He called the financial giving a fragrant aroma to God. And again, this church is to be commended because I have intentionally told the deacons and the guys who do the counting and the elders have said, I don't ever want to see anything that has anything to do with our financial giving here. I don't want to know who gives the most or the least or the most consistent or whatever, how they give. My personal preference is that I give cash so that way it's not trackable at all because no one needs to really know who the most giver is or who the least giver is, because really we can't determine that. God alone knows what percentage people are giving. Think about the story of the widow's mites. But this group is very good at their financial giving from the little bit that I was told from some people. And it's not just our contribution that I'm talking about here, but again, private acts of charity that I see people doing. The gifts that people are giving to one another, in so many different ways, has just been incredible and encouraging, and I'm so thankful that this group is doing this. Now, you'll notice there on this chart, and by the way, this chart here was, yeah, it's a meme off the internet, and it was geared more towards marriages, so it's going to have some moments here where you're like, that sounds much more towards marriages. I'm trying to show you how this applies to all relationships. You take this piece of the puzzle and you plug it in where you need it, in your marriage, with your parents, with your siblings, with your children, with your church people. And you'll notice here on the left, receiving gifts. A lot of times when I hear people, and I do this all the time, this is all the way I rattle, when I rattle off the love language, it's always giving gifts. But when you go back to the original source material, he does call it receiving gifts. And so I felt very convicted about this because this is my weakness. This was my zero. This is my fifth place. And it has happened. Gifts have been given within my family to me, in which I was the equivalent of that person who said, no, I don't want the hug. I was kind of like, oh, that's a, I don't want that gift. That is a terrible way to receive someone's primary love language. So if this is your fifth place, you're not alone. And together we can do this. We can put a smile on our face and be thankful that that person thought about us and spent some money on us. It doesn't have to be expensive. One of the things he talks about is that gifts actually can be cost you $0, and it can still be a meaningful gift that speaks to their love language. He does also advise this, specifically to marriages, and I would think this can also apply in other areas. He says marriages ought to have a conversation about their spending orientation. Here's what that means. Some people are happy when they're saving. Whew, that felt good. Some people are happy when they're spending. Oh, that hurt, right? And some of y'all were the opposite of me. You're like, no, I'm going out to buy something today. I mean, I've got that Applebee's lunch special. I'm ready to go down there right now, you know. And could you hurry up this sermon? Some of us love to spend money. Some of us love to save money. And so we do need to have that conversation about a spending orientation before we get carried away with just saying, well, that's my love language, buying gifts. So I'm buying you lunch today. And dinner tonight, ice cream later on whenever we get sleepy, and tomorrow morning I'm taking us out to Starbucks. Hold on a second. Let's not overspend just because we've justified it as our gift. Again, Proverbs, there is one about this, about how gifts can earn a place before the throne. And then the next one, quality time. Again, church principle for this one is that God has commanded us to gather together. But beyond that gathering, we do need to spend some time thinking about what the full context of Hebrews says. So I hope to maybe start a sermon series on Hebrews down the road here in a bit. But the short answer is, it doesn't say, make sure you're there at church. It says, give consideration how when you're gathering, you can stimulate one another to love and good works. You know, that next love language we're about to get to. And so there was a purpose to the gathering. And the gatherings were not just gathering to worship, gathering on the first day of the week. You read in the book of Acts that they were taking bread together from house to house. So they had meals together. It can be in the house. But they didn't have as much access to restaurants as we do now today. So if your house isn't good for guests, do it at a restaurant. Again, if you can afford that, have a conversation with your spending orientation. But spending time together is important. And now this quality time, you think about this with dads, this is the easy one to pick on, dad, sorry. But what different image do you get here between the two situations? In situation number A, there's a father and son in the front yard playing pitch and catch. A few houses down you pass and there's a father and son playing pitch and catch, but dad is doing this. It's not quantity time. But it's quality time. And this is going to be hard because I've noticed that I love that Apple now tells us your screen time is up or down. And I've not been happy with where my screen time is at lately. For some reason, I've been on my screen more than I should. And so that's me time. And it's not quality time with others in the room together. Now, some of you are saying, well, what if we're sharing memes with one another? Okay, we'll get to that. So just hang on, Tori. Okay. So we need to think through quality time again with our marriages, with our children, with our church family. And again, the workplace may even apply on this. It's very easy at the workplace to go off in your little cubicle on the corner and not have anything to do with it at the workplace. And people begin to wonder, are they happy to be here? Do they care about me? Do they like me? And you may be missing an opportunity for having an open door of opportunity for the gospel because you've isolated yourself at the workplace instead of being willing to go down to the lunchroom and hang out. And you may say, well, yeah, but Colter, they talk about filthy things there and there's just so much sin. It's just, you know what I mean by this. I don't want you to go and go, run into temptation on purpose that you can't handle. But with prayer to God, say, God, help me to go into that lunch space with my coworkers and be an example for goodness so I can build connections that might someday give me an opportunity to invite them to come see Jesus and his local church. Quality time. All of these are important. What I strive to do with Lauren and the kids is regularly inventory, have I done all five with all four of them? And some days I'm blessed with the opportunity to get to do all five. And so I just want to encourage you with that, but you know, be careful with that as well. Finally, then the acts of service. You know, there are so many examples in the Bible of these different love languages. It was hard to pick some. But let's look at Galatians chapter 5, verse 13. Galatians chapter 5, verse 13 says, "For you were called to freedom, brothers, only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another." 1 John chapter 3, verse 18 says, "Let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and truth." Jesus came, and in that famous scene in John chapter 13, how did he show them love? His disciples, washing their feet, an everyday menial task of the ancient world. If the King of Kings, God's only child, could humble himself enough to do that for those disciples, then may God help us to be willing to dig in and get our hands dirty serving one another. And again, church, thank you so much for having so many of you here who have indeed done those things. So from beginning to end, these love languages have so many different possible Bible backgrounds to affirm them, to encourage them. And so I want to ask us all to be observant and adapt to those that have other personalities. When I did a little bit of a research online for these love languages to refresh my memory, to relook at all these different things, and then to build this PowerPoint, I came across somebody saying that they felt their love language wasn't in the five. Here's what their love language was. Sending memes and TikTok clips to one another, they said, and that's not in there. Well, when the guy wrote the book, those things didn't exist. And so what I would also tell you to be mindful of is to look around and observe the people in your life. How are they interacting with you? And be able to interact with them and the things that they find interesting. That's really what this is all about, is being observant of the people around you and how they live and behave and show their love and friendship with you. And so you may be one of those who loves, that's what you all do for your friendship, share memes all the time. And that's fine too. Just make sure that you communicate with others. Don't make it just something you do over here on this. Find ways to encourage others. Find ways to involve others so that we all feel connected and loved by God's people.